The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 12th canto, 3rd chapter, text number 33, by His Divine Grace, Srila Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj Gurudev, given May 1st, 1985, in Dallas.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Avrata Patavo Saucha Bhikshavas Cha Kutumbina Tapasvino Gramavasa Yasinho Tyarthalo Lupa. Avrata Patavo Saucha Bhikshavascha Kutumbinaha Tapasvino Gramavasa Nyasino Tyatalo Lupa Bhattava. The Brahmacharis Asochaha, unclean. Bhikshavaha, prone to begging. Cha, and Kutumbina, the householders. Tapasvina, those who have gone to the forest for austerities. Gramavasha, village residents. Nyashina, the sannyasis. Atyarta Lolupa, excessively greedy for wealth. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Acharyadev. The brahmacharis will fail to execute their vows and become generally unclean. The householders will become beggars. The vanaprastas will live in the villages, and the sannyasis will become greedy for wealth. Purport. Brahmacharya, celibate student life, is practically non-existent in the age of Kali. In America, many boys' schools have become co-educational because young men frankly refuse to live without the constant companionship of lusty young girls. Also, we have personally observed throughout the Western world that student residences are among the dirtiest places on earth, as predicted here by the word asochaha. Concerning householder beggars, when devotees of the Lord go door to door distributing transcendental literature and requesting donations for the propagation of God's glories, irritated householders commonly reply, "Someone should give me a donation." Householders in the Kali Yuga are not charitable. Instead, because of their miserly mentality, they become irritated when spiritual mendicants approach them. In Vedic culture, at the age of 50, couples retire to sacred places for austere life and spiritual perfection. In countries like America, however, retirement cities have been constructed wherein elderly people can make fools of themselves by wasting the last years of their lives playing golf, ping pong, and shuffleboard. And by engaging in pathetic attempts at love affairs, even while their bodies are horribly rotting and their minds are growing senile. This shameless abuse of the venerable last years of life denotes a stubborn unwillingness to acknowledge the actual purpose of human life and is certainly an offense against God. The words nyasino tyartha lo lupaha indicate that charismatic religious leaders, and even those who are not charismatic, will proclaim themselves prophets, saints, and incarnations to cheat the innocent public and fatten their bank accounts. Therefore, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is working arduously to establish bona fide celibate student life, religious householder life, dignified and progressive retirement, and genuine spiritual leadership for the entire world. Today, May 9, 1982, in the sensual city of Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, we have awarded sannyas, the renounced order of life, to three young men, two Brazilians and one American, with the sincere hope that they will faithfully execute the rigid vows of renounced life and provide authentic spiritual leadership in South America. So this is a continuation of a description of the symptoms of the Kali Yuga. Beginning with today's text, a description of the degradation of the four varnas and ashrams. Here specifically the ashrams are mentioned. The brahmacharis will fail to execute their vows. Brahmachari gurukule vashantanto kuturhitan. This statement is there in the Bhagavatam that a brahmachari, a student who lives at the school of the guru, must be strictly celibate. So celibacy is the principal qualification for brahmacharya. Therefore, brahmachari should keep himself as far as possible free from association with women, and especially women on any kind of intimate basis. Unfortunately, due to the free license given in this age for mixing with men and women, our brahmacharis are allowed those who are brahmacharis have been mixing with women since they were very young children. And so the tendency is that when becoming a brahmachari, after joining the movement, they find it very difficult to remain celibate because the mind has become polluted with so many illicit connections with women. Therefore, we have to make an arrangement. This is disturbance, so stop. Therefore, we have to make an arrangement whereby at least our students should be protected. Because once a boy reaches a certain age, the sex urge becomes manifest. That is why you will see that the four Kumaras, the sons of Brahma, wanted to remain very young. Because in early youth or childhood, this sexual urge does not become prominent. But as soon as the body develops, then sex desire takes hold. So is advised that school should be taught in such a way, and ashrams should be created in such a way, that the boys do not mix freely with the girls. If they do, the result will be disastrous. We should be thoughtful that whatever ills we were subjected to, we should at least save our children from not having to go through the same problems. This is responsible family life, or responsible parenthood, not to subject your children to the same foolish proclivities which you were allowed to engage in. Women are also very lusty in this age, and they are no longer chaste. The main quality which a girl should be trained up in is chastity. Because if a girl remains very chaste, that means that ultimately if she only knows intimately her husband, then this will protect all kinds of irreligious principles from destroying society as a whole. So, unfortunately today, in common society, there is no brahmacharya institution. You see, students go to school and they have to make the schools co-ed. Most of the prestigious schools which were in America were separate schools for men and women. But nowadays, even in these revered institutions, they have made them co-educational. Because why? They find that they won't get any students to enroll. The schools will go bankrupt because the boys insist that unless they can have free mixing with the girls, then they are unwilling to go to that school. And it has become so ridiculous that now even the bathrooms have become co-educational. That has happened in many institutions. So this is all progress towards animalism, as opposed to advancement of human civilization. At least our society has to be beyond this tendency. We have to train our brahmacharis to be very strict in avoidance of any kind of intimate association with women. If a brahmachari does this, then he can basically diminish his tendency for sex life. And that is very good, because the difference between spiritual life and material life spins on this principle of sex. Sex life is the most desirable type of enjoyment in material existence. But for a spiritualist, sex life becomes abominable because generally it is forgetfulness of God. Only when one practices sex life according to strict religious principles, that means to have sex within marriage, after chanting 50 rounds, and only for the purpose of trying to have a child. Unless it is like that, sex life means to forget God. It means to push God out of the mind and consciousness. So one who is desirous of having a relationship with the Lord wants to gradually be able to overcome this tendency for sex desire. And it becomes much easier if one does not associate between the sexes. People sometimes question, why is it that in our society, for example, the men sit separately from the women? Yes, because we understand the tendency is there for sex increase, and we want to decrease this tendency. You can see in most churches and religious institutions, they never think to separate the men and the women. The Orthodox churches and religions do, always do it. In every religion, sexes were always separated. So why? Because it's a distraction. It's the bodily conception of life which becomes reinforced through sex attraction. So if we want to understand our identity as pure spirit soul, then we have to try to diminish this. And this has to be done, here it's mentioned, by the brahmacharis if they want to properly execute their vows. A brahmachari should be in a very servile mood and friendly mood towards the spiritual master. His business is simply to go out and work hard for the spiritual master. He should take satisfaction in serving the spiritual master without any personal consideration for his own needs, as opposed to a householder who, in the beginning at least, feels still very strongly that I need to look after myself and my own needs more. When one has that propensity, then a brahmachari has to get married. But a true brahmachari will simply take pleasure in performing austerities, and his austerities give him satisfaction. He likes austerity. He likes to simply be meditating constantly on serving the spiritual master. Now, if one becomes a householder due to some desire still for sexual life, still he can be a brahmachari grihastha. That means a brahmachari grihastha only associates with a wife for the purpose of serving the spiritual master in Krishna, and not otherwise. A brahmachari grihastha does not engage in any kind of sense gratification. That is to say, the man and the woman do not engage in householder life simply for mundane pleasure. Their household is just as good as the brahmachari ashram. It is always kept with the spiritual master as the central focus. It mentions here that a brahmachari should remain very clean. That means not only clean in the appearance, physical appearance, of his personal clothing, his body being bathed regularly, but he should keep his place that he lives in very clean. So it's incumbent upon those who are living in our brahmachari ashram downstairs to construct it in such a way that it can be kept perfectly clean. Otherwise, it mentions here that anyone who lives in such an environment that is not clean cannot practice the vows of brahmacharya. It's very simple. They will not remain a brahmachari. Because if the brahmachari is trying to keep his mind free from the pollution of sex thoughts, then it helps to be in an atmosphere that's also very sattvic or clean surrounding him. Of course, the same is true also for those who live in any ashram. It should be I sometimes look over our properties and I wonder how it is possible for persons to live in Krishna consciousness in such conditions. And it is a matter of individual consideration. It's not that it is outside of your control. There's no reason why you cannot keep your lawns clean, your houses freshly painted, inside very nice. It's simply a question of consciousness. If you have that consciousness, then automatically you will demonstrate it and manifest it in your surroundings. And if your consciousness is not clean, then you won't mind living in a pigsty. So householders, it mentions here, will become beggars. Actually, according to the Varnashram system, a householder is meant to give in charity. When a householder maintains the other ashrams, the brahmachari, the vanaprastha, and the sannyasi, a householder makes spiritual advancement. Therefore, it is very nice that our household devotees go out on sankirtan, because the kind of sankirtan we're doing of raising funds means that anyone who is a householder who goes out on sankirtan is actually, whether man or woman, is actually fulfilling their responsibility of maintaining the other ashrams. Similarly, anyone who gets a job should understand that it's not sufficient simply to keep yourself maintained. The duty, if you're going to not be a full-time worker within the institution, rather if you want to go outside and get a job, then you have to understand what the duty of a householder is. It's the opposite of begging. The opposite of begging is to give to the beggars, to give charity. So if someone is a householder and is not engaged in full-time service in the temple, then they should take it as their responsibility to maintain the brahmachari ashram, the vanaprastha ashram, and the sannyasa ashram. This is the real responsibility, and Prabhupada wanted our movement to be established in that way, and that's why it's stated so in the books. And because our movement has not yet been established on that platform, so many problems develop, which are too numerous to describe here. The Vanaprastas will live in the villages. Yes, this is another unfortunate situation. That instead of persons retiring from family life when the children grow up and moving away to a place, a holy place, as we have seen in India sometimes, people who are elderly, they will leave their family, comfortable family environment, and they'll go to a place like Vrindavan or Mayapur, and they'll do full-time devotional service. This is what is meant by Vanaprastha, because in this day and age, it is not so easy to retire to the forest until we establish our Vanaprastha ashram in New Kurukshetra. Then you can live in a forest. We'll make a Vanaprastha ashram there, where Vanaprasthas will live. But it will not be like the places that we have seen, just like in, I think it's Phoenix, Arizona. Have you seen that, Gunnar Grimash? They have these so many of them, yes, in Arizona, because they like that. The weather is very good there, so the elderly like that, so their bones don't ache so much because of the heat of the sun. And you go into these villages. I think I wrote about it in Servant of the Servant. It's just unbelievable to see, you know, men and women in their 60s and 70s pedaling around on, you know, two-seater bicycles and playing, as Acharyadeva says, ping pong and shuffleboard and trying to engage in a whole new youthful way of life to enjoy the last few years of their life. And practically people work hard their whole lives, saving their money, just so that they can retire and try to enjoy. But what they don't realize is that by the time they retire, their bodies are too old to enjoy with. When you reach 65 years old, what is left within the body to enjoy with? It's so useless and old, you can't enjoy properly. So it's just this terrible, terrible type of imitation enjoyment. It's repulsive to see men and women trying to be youthful lovers, when actually they should be turning their total attention now back to Godhead to prepare themselves for what is about to happen, which is that they're going to die. This is a misdirected civilization, a civilization that doesn't have the slightest understanding of what human life is meant for. So our Vanaprastas, that means our devotees, when those of you who are householders, once the children grow up, you have to definitely be in a position where you can gradually reduce, you see, the family situation, reduce the comfortable arrangement and begin to live in a simple way. But unless you have practiced a certain amount of austerity throughout your household life, you won't be prepared for Vanaprastha ashram. Therefore, it is an austerity for a householder to earn sufficient money to be able to give in charity. That is the austerity of a household life. The austerity of the household life is that you're supposed to maintain the other three ashrams, not just yourself. Anyone who only maintains themselves is not performing austerity. It's a householder who maintains the other ashrams that does his austerity. So if you do that austerity, then it will also be easy to do the austerity of Vanaprastha ashram, which is to reduce your belongings, to move away from the intimate activities of your children, and to just fully concentrate on seva, Krishna seva, service to Krishna. And this is progressive human life. Not to live in some village where you're surrounded by, you know, and this is the fact that sannyasis and ladies also who are in the renounced mood and retired people, it becomes a disturbance for those who are spiritually interested to be constantly surrounded by the family, you know, family affairs. They don't like that atmosphere so much. So we have to actually create a situation where such persons can live peacefully and cultivate their spiritual life nicely. and not try to, you know, it's a little pathetic. It is pathetic, you see, to see that persons who grow old again become absorbed in family affairs. That's what happens in material existence. That's what happens. That the grandmother and the grandfather just look forward to being with the grandchildren and staying stuck in the conception of family life. And I should be very grave. As you grow older, you should become more and more grave. Sannyasis will become greedy for wealth. And we have seen that so many sadhus have gone from India and come to America with only one business, how to acquire wealth. And not to actually give genuine spiritual life. And even here, we see that so many people turn to the business of sannyasis, which is preaching work. They become religious leaders simply to attain wealth. Now they don't even bother to become sannyasis. Formerly in Vedic culture, it was generally the sannyasis and the Brahmins who were engaged for religious preaching work. And even in the Catholic Church, for example, it was the celibate priests who engaged in the preaching work. And amongst the Jews, I don't know, I guess they got married, the rabbis, didn't they? Huh? In the Orthodox? Huh? Anybody know? Yeah, well, some traditions. Anyway, the point was that it was understood that in order to be able to have the authority to preach, one should not be subjected to the impulses and desires which come due to association with women, which means wealth, etc. When one associates with a woman, automatically the woman will demand a certain degree of sense gratification. And therefore, one feels the need to acquire wealth. That is why it becomes difficult to mix these things up, unless one is very sober, to mix up the preaching work and at the same time be a householder. One has to be very careful not to dovetail the fruits which come as a result of preaching for maintaining one's household life. And so many persons do that. You see these big evangelists and others like them. They become fabulously wealthy, and they enjoy like anything. And some of them even preach that religion means whoever can become the wealthiest is the most God-conscious. As opposed to the fact that the preachers, these sannyasis, or anyone who was preaching, was meant to live simply by the mercy of Krishna, by the mercy of God, in a simple way, and not become overwhelmed with artificial standards of enjoyment. So we have to demonstrate ideal brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas life. That will attract people. When these ashrams are purely established as far as possible, you will see the public become very much attracted to our society. So each person should sincerely work within the context of their duties according to their ashram. But understand that in each ashram, the goal is to become Krishna conscious. It's not that you should simply think of it in a material platform. If one is a brahmachari, a grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, still they must sufficiently hear and chant the glories of Krishna, because that is the transcendental aspect which keeps one purified in performance of one's duties. That's why everyone comes to the program in the morning, not just the brahmacharis or the vanaprasthas or sannyasis. The grihasthas must also come to the full morning program. All the ashrams come. This morning program is meant beyond the designation of ashram or varna. It is meant simply for pure spiritual development. The morning program is not directed specifically towards one's varna or ashram duties. It is directed towards eternal spiritual life. So everyone has to attend the full morning program and then throughout the day fulfill the duties of your ashram. Are there any questions? Yeah.
Srila Gurudev, I have two questions. First is, although this verse seems to be addressed to society in general, the criticisms that are made in this verse could occasionally be applied to segments of our International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So how can we purify our society so that we can come up to the proper standard of ideal examples?
I said how you could purify them. I gave examples. Each person should understand specifically, according to Shastra, what the duties of his or her ashram is, and then try to establish that situation. The Bhagavatam lists very clearly what an ideal brahmachari is, what an ideal grihastha is, what an ideal vanaprastha is, and what an ideal sannyasi is. So each person within their ashram should try for establishing themselves very clearly according to that ashram description. Next question.
In our society, sometimes sannyasis are managing large amounts of money and even engaging in business, providing that the fruits of those labors are going to support and further the work of the society. Is this acceptable activity for sannyasis?
Not so desirable, no. Prabhupada didn't want to do it. He said, let me retire so I can simply write. But we couldn't let him retire because we weren't expert enough to let him retire. A sannyasi's business is to preach Krishna consciousness. It's not to do business and it's not to do management. When I took sannyas, I was a member of the GBC. Prabhupada forced me to resign. He didn't force me. I resigned from the GBC because you couldn't be a sannyasi and be a GBC member. But within 9 months, Prabhupada could not find anyone in India to take over my responsibilities, so he had to ask me to resume my GBC managerial duties because there was no one else to do them. But it was understood that it wasn't at all ideal for a sannyasi. And it's not ideal for a sannyasi to manage and do business. We may do it because others are not doing their duty. It's not my business to do those things. It's my business to preach Krishna consciousness. But then let the others do what their duties are. Of course, managing an ashram in a temple is different also. That's different than doing business management. Very often the sannyasis take this as part of their responsibility, that they can look after the affairs of the temple, but not the heavy affairs that it has come to mean nowadays. Legal entanglements, super involved financial entanglements, that is not the business of a sannyasi. But we do these things because no one else is there to do it responsibly. But sannyasis could look after the ashram. They can do certain things of management. They can manage the preaching. Just like I was managing our Radha Dhamana party, that was big management. But it was directly involving preaching work. Anybody who preaches, if the preaching is successful, it will entail management. But the management a sannyasi should do is to manage the preaching work, not to manage, which householders will live in which building and how much their allowance is going to be and 1.5 million other things that we have to do here.
You mentioned that the responsibility of the householders is to support the other three ashrams financially. So, should it be that a person who's not capable of making money, that he should not get married in that sense because he's not able to provide a financial basis for the other ashrams?
And let him at least maintain himself.
Isn't that in doing his, the real duty? Because the real duty is that he should support the brahmacharis.
That's true. He's not very successful, but at least it's somewhat successful. At least he should not be a burden. If he can't maintain the brahmacharis, at least don't be maintained by them. That's also better. There's different degrees of good. Better to be able to do your full duty and maintain the other ashrams. But if you cannot, then better to maintain yourself. at least maintain yourself if you're a householder. Unless your service is so much needed by the society that the society is willing to maintain you. But you see, then it should be decided, if it was ideal, by the householders, which householders they feel are so essential to their community that they'll employ them as Brahmins or Sudras or whatever they may be, whatever function they may be fulfilling. And then you'll see how easy it becomes to manage. It'll be very easy to know, because the householders will be supplying the money, and they'll be very careful who they put on their payroll. Be very careful. When you have to supply all the money, then you're very careful to decide who you're willing to support or not.
Surely, Gurudev, that it's seen that the materialists have their own way of maintaining persons that are in invalid conditions and unhealthy conditions. What is the proper Vedic way of maintaining persons that are
invalid or sick? We do that also. If someone is ill, we look after them, we maintain them. Gradually, more and more devotees are going to get ill because they're going to get old. When you get old, you get ill. These two things go together. So gradually we'll have to establish all kinds of arrangements for our elderly and invalid people. It'll happen. Just everybody here, you can see, there's practically no one sitting here that's over 40 years of age. Very few people. So therefore, there's not much illness. Because when you're young, your body is usually healthy. As we get in the 50s, 60s, 70s, you're going to see everybody's going to get old, and they're going to get ill, and they're going to die. And there's going to have to be proper. Gradually, we'll make those arrangements. Necessity will be the mother of invention. Another question.
So, in this situation, you've often explained that we're sort of pioneers, and it's an emergency that we do things that normally wouldn't be circumstances. So a lot of people are put in situations of doing business and more business, especially now with the Sangatana program attempting to increase. At what point does Over Endeavor come in terms of spending time reading, things like that? At what point do we draw the line, I guess?
Everybody has to read a certain amount of time each day, otherwise you go insane. At least I find it that way. If I don't read every day, at least for a half hour to an hour besides the time of the class, I just find myself being very dissatisfied. I just have annoying dissatisfaction. Just like if you get hungry in your stomach and you feel this empty pit-like feeling in your stomach, that's how I feel in my consciousness. It's like if you don't bathe. I feel like I haven't bathed my consciousness if I don't read daily Prabhupada's books. So if you don't mind being dirty, then you don't have to read. It's a question of consciousness. Brahminical people will automatically find the time and make the time to read. And if you're not so inclined, then you're probably not that brahminical. That's not necessarily bad, but that's the way it is. Not everybody is a Brahmin, you know, even if they have a thread. The Vaishyas and the Kshatriyas also used to be given second initiation. But not everybody's Brahminical. Just because you get second initiation, we call it Brahminical initiation, but we see that many people are not that Brahminically inclined. So they may not feel the need to read, but those who are Brahminically inclined will want to read, and they will make the time. Another question.
Those priyastas who are not able to give in charity money, could they not give in charity their time?
Oh, yes, and that's a very good thing to say. Yes, in answer to Udayananda's question, if someone cannot find the ability to make enough money to support the brahmacharis, the vanaprastas, and the sannyasis, then they can, as Naveen Krishna Prabhu said, they can give time. They can provide time, their service in the form of time, and do something practical which would be of the same or equal benefit in terms of making money. There are so many services. We require the help of so many persons here. Another thing is that one should not give post-dated checks always. Very often we find that grihasthas say that I will be giving after some time, and that time never comes. But that's not good. We got very real bills, etc., to pay, and the debtors will not accept post-dated checks from us. So your promise of post-dated support doesn't pay bills. So it can't go on and on post-dated. Other questions?
If someone isn't given his time and he has a certain amount of income, should he maintain his lifestyle on 50% of that income, no matter what the income happens to be? In other words, if someone thinks his standard of living has to be so much more, and he hasn't made that amount of money yet, so he can't
get his spiritual advancement then. That person is not going to make spiritual advancement. It's very, very scientifically explained. How are they going to make spiritual advancement then? If they live on such a high standard and they say, I can't give 50% because I... But nobody here lives on that high, such a high standard here that I see. I wish that anybody... I mean, as far as I'm concerned, nobody here is living on a standard yet that I accept, that I find acceptable. Nobody except myself. I don't find any householder here living on an acceptable standard to my way of thinking. The standard that we should live on is at least the standard of middle class America. And if you don't want to live on that standard, then I say get out of the cities and go to the farm. Because if our movement is going to show a sub, if it's going to show an impoverished standard, then you cannot preach in these cities. You should not be in the cities. Personally, I think we should live much less than the middle-class American standard. I don't think that that's a standard that's necessary for us, but it's very necessary for preaching. And if you can't raise the standard to that in this country, you cannot preach in this country. Cannot preach in this country. Not in the cities, anyway. Then you should establish a different type of society in the country and show an alternative lifestyle. Don't try to show an alternative lifestyle in the city because it won't work. So we need a lot of money. That's why Prabhupada in Los Angeles, he bought those buildings and he told every householder to have a nice apartment because he wanted them to be on the standard of every other American family. That was his point in doing that. That is exactly what his point was. Not that when you walk into the house, all you see is a bookshelf. You're living in an apartment building. They probably spent $300,000 or $400,000 to buy an apartment building. Each apartment was worth $30,000. And you go inside the house and there's no furnishing, just a bookshelf and an altar. And we are, yes, we are practicing austerity of Krishna consciousness. Who can understand that? So you invite someone over to your home to preach them. They say, oh, you just moved in? You say, no, I've been living here for 3 years. I don't think anyone is going to become convinced by that kind of preaching. That kind of preaching was all right 20 years ago. It doesn't work anymore.